This is Headlines Radio and David Lichtenstein. This week for Tisha B'Av, we will have Harav HaGaon Rav Shmuel Irons, the Rosh Kol of Detroit, who will give us some Divrei Nechama about Tisha B'Av. And afterwards, we will have the Moira D'Asra of the Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere and one of the most prolific Magidi Shurim in America with over 4,000 Shurim and YU Torah, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. You're listening to us on WMCA 570 or WMCA.com or on the Nachum Segal Network on NachumSegal.com. I'd like to discuss a point that is somewhat, you probably haven't heard before discussed about Tisha B'Av. And here is the issue. How do we deal with loss? How do we deal with fear? With setbacks? Do we numb them? You know, we can medicate. There are more psychologists in the United States per capita than probably any country in the world, except I think Argentina has more. We can medicate both legally or illegally, and today we can even get legal marijuana, so we can medicate using what used to be illegal drugs legally. Some people face their fears and their sadness, their losses, you know, their worst moments with alcohol. We drink, and that's why they have AAA, you know, trying to reclaim all the alcoholics. And for the suburbanites, what do? Sometimes they just shop themselves into oblivion. So here are ways to deal with setback and our saddest moments. And alternatively, we can face them and confront them. Now, sometimes we have to evade them. They're just too painful. And the halacha is that even though we're not supposed to say a dishonesty, the halacha is mutar l'shana yisvipnei hashalim. There are times when we're allowed to say an untruth because truth can be extremely frightening and painful, and there are times we're simply not up to it. And, you know, we're supposed to always be truthful, but there are exceptions. So Chazal recognized the concept of avoiding him. But what should be the norm? What should be the default position? Well, let's go. Let me tell you, share with you an interesting debate. And the debate is as follows. It happened in Athens. You know, Greece is in the news today. And here's a debate that happened in Greece just around 2,000 years ago. It was a grand debate. It was 60 Grecian philosophers in Athens. And there was one Jewish sage. And a very cryptic debate. It's in the Talmud and the Gemara and Bechiris on 8b. And the Gemara says like this, that the philosophers took out two eggs. And the Greek philosopher asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, he said, these two eggs, let me ask you. He was considered by Rabbi Yeshua was the most sharpest witted and able to best anyone in an argument. He was a fearless debater, a brilliant scholar. And he was, interestingly, for a living, he sold charcoal. He was in the energy business. He was also a Levi. He played the temple back during the second Bayis. So this happened 2,000 years ago. And he witnessed the Churban Abayis. So the Roman Caesar asked who's the wisest Jew at the time. And he was asked to represent Klal Yisrael. So what did they do? These 60 sages came back to them and they said like this. They said, which of these two eggs came from a white hen and which came from a black hen? A riddle. So the Marsha explains this wasn't some type of a silly, like a game, white hen, but they were bringing out a point. The Grecians were, for the most part, secular. And they said, a hen to give birth is 21 days from when it lays the egg until the chick hatches. And they said, there are 21 very special days in Judaism, from Rosh Hashanah until after Hashanah Rabbah. And those are days of forgiveness. And in the Sukkah, it's about love. It's about a relationship between God and Klal Yisrael. He said, but then afterwards, there's this 21 terrible days. And which are those? Those are the 21 days from when the siege of the Churban, Shavasa Batamas, until the destruction of the temple on Tisha B'Av. And they said, which egg comes from the white chicken and which from the black? And the 21 days of love were destroyed by the 21 days of horror, of sadness. And their point is that a lot of relationships, you know, there's a 50-some-odd or 60% divorce rate in America. And most relationships, if you ask people who get divorced, the number one reason is they say, you know, we thought we would live happily ever after, and we didn't. So their question was, they said, you know, love can be destroyed. So all that love that is engendered in forgiveness and salachti kidvarecha and coming together and tzukkos, it was destroyed because Klal Yisrael sinas chinam, there was in the first Beis HaMikdash, there was Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, there was clearly a breach of the covenant. So he said, Masha kana bezeh, ibed bezeh. So they said, you see, there's two eggs, and the black egg shows that the white egg is gone. 21 days, umavatal 21 days. So Reb Shua ben Chananya thought, and he came back, and he took out two pieces of cheese, and he asked them, he said, which piece of cheese comes from a black goat, and which piece of cheese comes from a white goat? So the Marsha explains, he says that there are two goats on Yom Kippur. He says there's the goat, the soyer Lashem, the sacrifice that's to God, and there's the soyer Lazazel, the soyer that it goes to the evil spirits that we throw off a cliff. And his point was, and both of them give cheese, the black and the white give cheese. So there is some type of a cheese, there is a gift that is given from the days of darkness too. And that was his response to their question. And I would like to explore this because clearly the days of darkness that they refer to, the 21 days of Tisha B'Av, and he responds to them, no, there is something special in Tisha B'Av, there is a cheese, there is a gift that it gives, and I would like to discuss that. And Chazal, the Torah actually says, V'kara le'mayid, that in a certain way, Tisha B'Av is a holiday, it's a gift. What is the holiday? And I don't want to go with, everybody says when a father slaps you, you know he's there. I would like to go with the new route that we really hasn't been discussed much. And here's the thought. Do we confront our fears, or do we hide from them? You know, I have a friend, the great Dr. Pelkowitz. He counsels women, and he goes for Shabbosim. So he told me recently, he went to a Shabbaton. It's an organization, I think he said it was called Dror, and it's about women whose husbands are in jail. And he was talking about how different women deal with it with their children. She said, one woman said, her husband was sentenced to 13 years in jail, and she told her children that her husband went on a business trip. A business trip for 13 years. He said there was another woman who said her husband was sentenced to 16 years in jail, and she said to them, her husband went to learn in Kollel for 16 years. Now, children know these things. And what does it create? It creates this black darkness of what we cannot discuss. We know it's out there, but it's the untouchable. If we touch it, it will consume us. It's that fear. If we're afraid to look up, if we look at it, it will kill us. You know, I spoke to another psychologist. He tells me he deals with disease, Rahman al-San, he deals with counseling. So there's a woman who comes to him, and she says that her father got sick, but they never said anything. And it took a 2 or 3 year process. And one day she came home and her mother just said, he's gone. He went to heaven. All along, no, he's this. He has a toothache. He has. And this woman was in her 30s. And she said, I can still not recover from that. Those 3 years of living in like this darkness and this cloud of not knowing what's going on. There's the unspeakable and the untouchable. And it's the fear of the unknown is so much greater than that we can confront. In fact, the word dema of tear also means in Hebrew, right? Dmai means something that's unknown. And a tear, what does it do to our vision when we cry? It obfuscates our vision. It clouds us. So the most frightening thing actually is the confusion. You know, when we were small, we would wake up in the middle of the night and we would see the boogeyman in the room. And if we were little, we would huddle under our beds and we would stick our head out and we could sit there shivering for hours waiting for the daylight to come. We would even be afraid, I remember as a child, to run out of my bed to go into my parents' room. And when the daylight would come, we would see it was like a shirt hanging on the back of a door. There was maybe a balloon left in the room from the day before, and it cast a shadow. The boogeyman of the unknown, when we turn on the light, almost always, they're less frightening than when we leave it in the dark. So, different cultures have different ways of approaching these terrible moments. Now, look in the Torah. There is no mention of death. Adam dies. Cain kills Hevel. Cain kills Abel. Nothing. Not a word about it. Not about the death. Not about the pain that the parents must have gone through. Noach dies. Noah. His children. Nothing. It's avoided. It's like the United States today. Where are obituaries? They're in the last page, buried someplace in the bottom. Most people never even know where they are because it's unspoken about. In fact, what do we do with older people? We send them away to someplace where we don't want to see them. We don't want to know them. A nursing home, usually far away, surrounded by a meadow. The less we know, the better off we are. Avram changes things. Abraham. The first time death is discussed, what do we see with Abraham? When Sarah dies, he said, Lispod Lasara Velifkosa. There's an entire chapter in the Torah about the lamentation that the hesped that Avram gives for Sarah and about her funeral. What is it? Avram is looking his most terrible moment of his life, the wife that he's lived with for 80 years, the mother of of his child, and he sits there and he cries. I hear something interesting. I read a story about a man whose wife died and he couldn't deal with it. And for 5 years afterwards, he would set breakfast on the table every day for her as if she was still there. The inability to look at the fear. Now, what does that do to us as people? The fears consume us. Because if there's something that terrifies me or you so much that we can't discuss it, what does that mean? That means there's something out there that will eat us. There's something that will eat you up if you look at it. It will consume you. It will break you. That mortgage, that lawsuit, that audit, that child, that disease, it will consume you. And that means that you are fragile and vulnerable and you are temporary. Your entire existence is fraught with risk. But if you open the light and look at it, it changes. Suddenly an element of eternity comes in. I can look at my worst fears, at the thing that horrifies me, and I can face it. The liberation of the children whose father is in jail. Your father is in jail. You can live with it. Now you know it's not a secret anymore. That disease, it's terrible. And now you know about it. Let me share with you some studies. There was a study done in 1979 by a Dr. Abeloff and a Dr. Derogatis. And they said patients who spoke about their cancer live longer. Women who spoke about their breast cancer, this was a study of hundreds of women, and accepted their reality, had longer lifespans than those who just like, they wouldn't talk about it. Here's a study by Pennebaker. He said people were asked to climb a hill, and they did a study. They took 100 people, and they took 50 of them and they said, we would like you to write down what in life are you scared of the most? What keeps you up at night? And they provided a counselor to discuss it with them. And the other 50, they didn't. The 50 who relieved themselves of their fears climb to the mountain quicker, faster than the other 50 by a substantial margin. The boogeyman is most frightening when the lights are off. So here's a halacha. We all know that a kohen is not allowed to be matama. A kohen cannot get near the body of the dead, because in Judaism, in Yiddishkeit, mitzvah gedola, there's a mitzvah to be happy. Happiness is creation. Happiness is about expressing. Happiness is man at his best. So sadness is something that's derided. And the kohen, the man who serves in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, he certainly is not allowed to be matama. But when a family member dies, there's a chiyuv to be matama. In fact, midaraisa, there's a chiyuv avelus. Everybody, if somebody dies, one of his relatives, you don't have the option of saying, I want to just avoid it, ignore it. There is a chiyuv to sit avelus. Shiva is a daraisa. It's a Torah obligation to sit shiva. And what is that? Confront your fear. Look at your fear in the eye. So it's interesting. These are the days, the 21 days, that we come to Tisha B'Av, truly the worst day for the Jews. Everything. The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The second temple was destroyed. They say that in 1492, the expulsion from Spain happened on Tisha B'Av. Numerous things. The breakout, World War I broke out on Tisha B'Av. There's been numerous and myriad of terrible events of Tisha B'Av. But what is the cheese? What is the gift that Tisha B'Av gives? The necessity to confront your fear. So what is almost an avoid of Tisha B'Av? I think we should all, you, me, we should take out a piece of paper and say, what scares you the most? What keeps you up at night? What is terrifying? Can I live with it? Now, here's something interesting. Mashiach, the Messiah, it's a Talmud Yerushalmi, it's a Medrash in Eicha, says, will be born on Tisha B'Av. Of all days of the year, Tisha B'Av, Mashiach will be born. And the answer is that when we relieve ourselves of our fears and we confront them, and we say there's something, they can't destroy me, in us gets born an element of eternity. You can't scare me anymore. Rabbi Nishom, God gave me the ability to survive it. Look what happens. The first person in the Torah to embrace death and to look it in the eye is Avraham. And what does he do right after the funeral of Sarah, right after the Levaya of Sarah? That's when he goes to find a shidduch, a match for Yitzchak. He says, now that I have embraced my greatest fear and I've said it cannot destroy me, I have become eternal and it is time to set my seed for eternity. Now is the time. After, from the Levaya, he goes and he tells Eliezer, go find a bride, a child bride for my son, Yitzchak. So, the seeds of eternity are planted when we recognize that we are stronger than our worst fears, than our worst opposition, than the worst things that life can throw out of us. The seed of Mashiach is on Tisha B'Av. That embracing those fears, that is when the Mashiach is born. The Messiah, eternity is born when we recognize that we are eternal beyond the worst that life can bring at us. That's when the Mashiach is born. Our next guest is Harav Shmuel Irons, the head of the Kollel of Greater Detroit. He'll give us a little bit of a background of the history and some Divrei Hesoiris reference to Tisha B'Av. Welcome, Rabbi Irons.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the Gemara in Yuma and Tesamud Beis, where the Gemara asks the question, why was the Bayis Rishon, why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? And the Gemara answers, because of the Shalosh Hamoris, because of the three cardinal sins, avoid azora, gilaraya, shvichas domim, my idolatry, immorality, says murder. Then the Gemara goes on and brings, the Gemara brings psukim, brings proof texts to each one of these, to each one of these causes. Then the Gemara goes on to ask the question, but what was the reason that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? After all, there were oisik b'teira uva mitzvah segmilas chasadim. And then the Gemara answers, because of sinas chinam. And this teaches us that sinas chinam shkula is the equivalent of those of the three chamuris, of the three of the three cardinal sins. There are several difficulties with this Gemara, even though you're all familiar with this. Many of them historical difficulties. One of them is the idea that the Beis HaMikdash, in the time of the Bias Rishon, you get the impression that they weren't Oisik B'Teir Avoida Gemilos Chasadim. And yet from the sources, from the Gemara itself, it seems that the level of Torah during the first Beis HaMikdash would seem to be infinitely greater than the later generations. There's a Gemara in Ksubas and Kuvav Amar Aleph that says about in the time of Elisha, and Elisha lived in Yisrael, was a northern kingdom, where in his time it was the reigning kings who were from the dynasty of Omri. Achav had introduced, with Izebel introduced, the Avodas Habal. Izebel was roidif, pursued and killed the Nevi'ei Hashem. And yet, during this time, the Gemara says that Elisha had 2,200 Talmidim that stood the whole year with him. In the contrast, during the time, a later period, by Rav only had 1,200 Talmidim that were there with him the whole year. Rav Huna had 800 Talmidim with him the whole year. I mean, this is in the worst situation, but they were learning Torah. And we know in later generations, in better times, even Yirmiyahu, who's being moichiach, who's castigating Klal Yisrael, he says, Tefsiya Torah lo yaduni. Those who grab the Torah don't know me. They're not fully sincere. But evidently, there was much asik b'Torah. So that's one thing that has to be understood. I mean, in addition, actually, there's a Gemara in the Dorim and Pei Aleph that regarding the pasuk that Ma'os is over the Oretz, Yirmiyahu says, why was the land destroyed? And he says it was a mystery to them because of the Torah. And the Gemara answers, Meshalei Berchu B'Torah Tchila. The problem was they learned Torah, but they didn't do it with a bracha beforehand. And the Ran, the Rabbeinu Nissim quotes the Rabbeinu Yonah, is indicative they didn't learn Torah Lishma. But evidently they were Oisik B'Torah. So that's one thing that has to be understood. Another thing that has to be understood is the impression of that Gemara is that Sinas Chinam itself is enough of a reason for the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. There's a Gemara in Shabbos in Lamed Beis Omud Beis that deals with various averis and the stringency, the choymer of these averis and the punishment. And it starts off with Sinas Chinam. And it says Sagas Sinas Chinam is an avera that one is punished, that there's Mariva Mateich Beso, it creates contentiousness within a family. This is the Isham Apel Rachmanos Apelis Nefolim, it creates miscarriages, that children die when they're young. And then it goes on, different averas, and finally it gets to Shvichas Domim. For that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It goes on because of Avodah Zorah and Gilui Arayos, and the fact they don't keep Shemitah, you didn't go into Golus. But it seems that the sin of Sinas Chinam is a personal avera. Only later on, by Shvichas Domim, there's a whole Ummah, the whole nations is accountable. Avoid Zora, Gilei Arayos. It seems that Sinas Chinam doesn't carry with it the same Chomer, doesn't carry with the same severity. And yet the Gemara and Yuma seems to equate the two. So how do you understand that? The third difficulty is that the impression of the Gemara is that during the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Shvichas Domim. I mean, we know there's no Avodah Zorah. There's no Shvichas Domim. And yet from the historical sources, it would seem to be the Shvichas Domim in the second Beis, period of the second Beis was much greater than the first Beis HaMikdash. We know Gufa from the Gemara speaks about in Samar Vav and Kedushin, where Yanai HaMelech killed out all the Rabbanon. And we know later on in Bava Basra and Avdalet, it says Hurdus killed off all the Rabbanon. And we know from historical sources, from Josephus, about the Yanai, it was the second Yanai, that killed thousands and thousands of Yidden. You know, it's close to the time of the Churban, we know from his source about the Sikari, this is like the Bar Yonim, who are murders. So why is it that, why can the Gemara say that the second Beis HaMikdash was so much greater than the first Beis HaMikdash? And it would seem to be that the Teretz is, that the Gemara explains in Shabbos and Daf Nun Hei, that there were great tzaddikim in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, but they weren't moichiach, they didn't rebuke those who were the Bali Avera, those who did sin. And because of their lack of rebuke, says their nitfas bavoin ador, they themselves are held responsible. And there's another Gemara in Shabbos and Kufyutes Amud Beis. It says that one of the ills was why Yerushalayim was destroyed, Shalei Chichu Zeh, that they didn't give rebuke, they didn't give Musar one to the other. It would seem, though, that problem didn't exist in the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's why those who were Oisik B'Teira and Gemilas Chasodim and Avoida were not held responsible for the ills of the others. In fact, if we see from historical sources, from non-Jewish sources of the time, the when they speak of the Pharisees, the Purushim, it's always in relation to the Teichocha, to the rebuke they're giving those who are not fulfilling the Torah. So it seems Teichocha was not their problem. Their problem seems to be another one. And really, that brings us to what the idea of Sinas Chinam is. And there's a lot, there's much said about the Sinas Chinam. But if you learn the Gemara, it would seem those who are Oisik B'Teira and Avoida and Gemilas HaSodim, they're Avoida and Mitzvahs, they were the ones who had Sinas Chinam. To whom did they have Sinas Chinam? After all, says there's a Mishnah in Yevamos and Yud-Gimel Beis that speaks about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that we know is disagreed on. There are on hundreds of issues, and sometimes it was very impassioned. And yet, there's more. Says the Mishnah, there's Avav Achva between them. They intermarried in between each other. So, who was the Sinas Chinam to? And it would seem to be that the Sinas Chinam they were talking about was not directed to other. Of the Chaverim. I mean, they seem to... The Gemara in Sanhedrin Chav Dalet speaks about how the Talmid Chum and Eretz Yisrael are so ne'imim, they're so pleasant one to the other. It seems the problem was to the Amioritz, to the Roshoyim. And again, the question is, why did they have Sinas Chinam then? They were such exemplary people, such Talmid Chachamim. And it would seem as the answer really stems from there's an interesting Gemara in Pesachim in Kufyu Gimel Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that if you see someone who does a Dvar Avera, see something that's wrong, you're mechiach him, and he knows that it's wrong, and he still does this. You're allowed, you can't, since you're only an Eid Echad, you can't tell Besdin. But you're allowed to hate the person. And the Rav, you're allowed to hate them. Kurv Nachum Bar Yisus is a mitzvah to hate such a person. And Tosfos explains says, based on this Gemara, he says, however, if you see someone who is worthy of being hated, and he, based on the Gemara in Bava Metzila and Beis on Beis, you see that he's worthy of being hated. But naturally, the person who's the who is the object of your richuk, of your hatred, is going to hate you back. It's nekamayim ponim oponim. Because there's a pasuk in Mishlei, is a Gemara in Kuf Yud Zayin in Yevamos. And Mimela says, once that person hates you, you naturally feel uncomfortable and will hate him back again. That secondary hatred is already a personal hatred. And that hatred is you're not allowed to have. To the extent of there are two people, one who's a, at least this is how Tosfos understands it, there are two people in need. One is he's carrying a load to market and the load has fallen off. The animal is not in distress. The other one is that the animal still has the load and the animal is in distress. It's being pained. It could be harmed. Normally, you help the one that the animal is in distress. However, in a situation that the one whose animal is in distress is your friend, and the one who is not in distress is your enemy, and Tosfos explains your enemy means the one you're allowed to hate, you should still go and help your enemy. Is because to get rid of the hatred that you have. Even though you would be allowed to hate them, but there's always this extra level of hatred, that secondary level of hatred. And that secondary level of hatred is really, that's not allowed. You have to get rid of that. It would seem, perhaps, that's the case that we're seeing about these, the Talmid Chacham of the Dor, who were the object of untold hatred. The Gemara in Pesachim and Memtes on the Beis describes the hatred the Amioritz have for Talmid Chachamim. About the sakona, the danger that a Talmid Chacham is in being in the presence of an Amioritz. The Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, who was a tremendous Baal Midas even when he was an Amioritz, said, if I had, at that time in my life, if I would have seen the Talmid Chacham, I would have bitten him, says, like a donkey, says, bites a... This is it would bite a person, it would break the bones. I was so angry at them. And Tosfos and Ksubas and Samach Beis Omer Beis explains, because he understood the fact that they were Purushim and they were Porush from the Amoritz, says that they separated themselves. They viewed it, and probably the others amongst him, has viewed it as a sign of arrogance, that they're looking down at us. And as a result, says, there was tremendous ill will and hatred. Well, the Talmid Chacham, that generation, the object of all that hatred, would be understood, at least according to Tosfos and Pesachim, that they themselves would have similar feelings. And if that's the case, that was the Sinas Chinam. The Sinas Chinam that we're talking about is really the Sinas Chinam where it's not totally unwarranted, where there were reason to rationalize why you should have a Sina. Says these are people. They're not nizra mitzvahs. There's a Gemara in Brachas and Mem Zayin of Beis that speaks about the lack of total commitment to mitzvahs of the Amioritz the unlearned had. Says there were certain grounds one could rationalize it, but it went beyond. It became personal. That was a sinas chinam. If that's the case, one could now understand perhaps. Why is it then that Sinas Chinam is the cause of destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Because after all, as we point out from the Gemara in Shabbos, Alamed Beis, Alamed Beis, Avada Sinas Chinam is an Avera, but doesn't seem to warrant to have that same Chomer, the same harshness to warrant a Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Malbim explains in his Pirush on Daniel, and the BMS and the original Churban Beis HaMikdash and the cause of the Churban Beis HaMikdash was not alleviated totally after 70 years. Really, that's why it was Bashert that there should be 420 years, an addition of the second bias, and it was not meant to last more than that. That's Mavur, that's a Gemara, and Nozer Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. It wasn't designed to last more. It was to be, says, that through those years, and it was years mostly of golus and mostly of suffering, that they should have a complete kapora for the original averas that caused the churban bayis rishon. If that's the case, and that the whole and that whole tkufa, they were really, it was a tkufa for them to do tshuva for the original averas. So if the question is, if they had such talmid chachamim, such tzaddikim in the door, why weren't those tzaddikim ashpi on the door? Why didn't it cause the total, the correction, the tikkuns of all of what had, what was caused originally? And it would seem because of the sinas chinam, says that they no longer have be able to have that hashpa on the people. I mean, ultimately, says it's only because of the ava that they feel, says that they're going to be changed. And Ozovus Reb Nosson and Perek Yud Beis to speak how Aaron, the famous member of Hillel, that one should be, says that there should be Oyev Shalom, Roydev Shalom, Oyev Sabrius and Makarvan Latoira. The fact is that Aaron was an Oyev Shalom, that he was Oyev Sabrius. Everyone felt that Aaron was his friend, and that itself, this is, it was beneath their dignity to sin. They felt as they were connected to Aaron. If the people as a whole, who we know from Josephus respected Talmid Chachamim, and they looked in terms of their, that they were the representatives of the Das Hashem, of what Torah is, but if they would have despite all of the terrible nisyonis of being hated, but if they would have been like Hillel, they would have turned around and seen the whole generation. They gave Teichacha, but they had responsibility because they needed to have, in order to forgive that Teichacha, the people had to be feels that feeling of Ava. That's where Hillel really lived. He flourished in the last century before the Churban. He died 60 years before the Churban. It was his memories that he saw what was coming. He says that this is the dogish that one has to have, says this avas habriyas umakarvan l'teira. And in a sense, one can understand then that which he said, the Gemara says, they couldn't understand why the churban happened by the bayis rishon. And this is the answer, they didn't learn Torah l'shma. Perhaps we could understand that as well. Because why weren't they, why didn't they have a hashbuk? They didn't give teichacha, it's true. But they should have had hashpah on all the people. Why weren't they like Aaron HaKohen? And the answer was is that that which you say is that that which attracts a Talmud Chacham is because he's, it's a kol alam etor l'shmo zoich l'dvorim harbe nikra oyev ohuv. He becomes beloved because the Torah creates the Torah l'shmo that he has creates him. He becomes another person. There's a magnetism. But if they learn Torah Shalei Lashma, it doesn't have that magnetism. And that's why so they weren't able to mashpi on the door. You know, if that's the case, that really, then what we're saying here is that the Churban really came about. They were great people. But they had, in a sense, a responsibility for the door. And had they had that sense of Avas Habrias, this is Hillel's memory. Says, "Oyev Sabrius Makarvan LaTorah." Says, "Our history would have been different." Says, "Now, as we're holding Baruch Hashem, we've seen a whole renaissance of a commitment to Limud HaTorah." Says, "As Diktuk B'Mitzvus, Baruch Hashem, we've seen in our whole generation is, but there's." Unfortunately, says so many says that aren't touched by this, and perhaps there's only every individual is limited to what he can do. However, says if we took the member of Hillel to Oyev Shalom, Roydev Shalom, Oyev Sabrius and Makarvan L'Teira, and we took it, it says it would create a certain magnetism that beyond what we learn, what we do. Says, well, it has an effect, it's on a much broader and a wider area. And Amir Hashem, Sa'ibish Zohelfen, says that in the schus of all that we do, and the Liman HaTeira, and the mitzvahs, and the Avas HaBrias, there's Amir Hashem, we should be zeicher for the Gula Shleimim, here of Yameinu Amen. Kaltiv.
We have with us Rabbi Arye Leibowitz, the Rav of North Woodmere. He's also the most prolific speaker on YUTorah.org with over 4,000 shiurim and a frequent Rebbe at Lander's Yeshiva in Queens, and who will give us a few divrei hisoyrus and halacha about regarding Tisha B'Av. Welcome, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you very much. One of the things that we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, there is a limited list, but one of the items that we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av is the Agadatas related to the Churban HaBayis that appears in Maseches Gittin. And the Gemara over there tells a remarkable story of the great Jewish hero of the post-Churban era, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Jewish people didn't really know exactly how to react after the Churban, but even as it was happening, they weren't sure what their next move should be, and there was significant debate between the Chachamim and the Bar Yonim. The Bar Yonim was this group of thugs, for lack of a better term, who had a different strategy than the Chachamim had, and they thought that they had to fight, and that it was that any overtures of peace were not going to work, and the Chachamim thought that they didn't stand a chance to fight. And the Gemara goes through with some detail the episode of how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai managed to escape Yerushalayim when there was tremendous famine in Yerushalayim, when people were starving and they had to reach outside of the walls of Yerushalayim when they were under siege. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai faked his own death, and he managed to get outside of the walls of the city, and he impressed the general through an interesting conversation where he told him that he is going to become the next king, or that he is already the next king, because we have a haftacha from the Navi that Hashem would never let Yerushalayim fall in the hands of anyone who's not a king. And the general was so impressed, Vespasian was so impressed, that he offered him three wishes. He offered him, ask me whatever it is that you would want for the Jewish people to have. And it's very interesting, the Chazal are not sure whether he did the right thing, because he didn't ask to just stop the Churban, to not destroy the Beis HaMikdash, to save the Beis HaMikdash. And the reason he didn't ask that was because he thought that it wouldn't be granted. He thought that that request wasn't going to work. So he made three more modest requests. The first request that he made was Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, that allow for the yeshiva to continue, allow for Yavne. The yeshiva was called Kerem b'Yavne because the Rabbanim used to sit in rows like a vineyard, in neat rows of Talmidei Chachamim. So he said, allow for Torah to continue, because Torah certainly is going to be our key to get through all the long years of Galus. So just allow for Yavne v'chachameha. And that's an obvious request, because of course Klal Yisrael can't survive without Torah. It doesn't make any sense that a nation should be able to survive thousands of years out of its native land. Most other nations, when they're exiled from their land, it's a generation, two generations, where they retain some remnant of the culture of what their land was, but ultimately it just falls away. Ultimately they become completely absorbed into whatever society they go to next. But for Klal Yisrael, it hasn't been that way. For Klal Yisrael, we retain a unique identity, and that it's not only because of anti-Semitism. It's also because we have this commitment to Torah. We have this connection to Torah. So it was really an obvious request to ask for Yavne v'chachameha. But what I want to focus on is the other two requests that he made that seem a little bit different. One thing he said is, I need a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok, that I need a medical professional to take care of Rabbi Tzadok. And then the other thing that he requested is Shushilta de Rabban Gamliel, that the family of the Nasi, the family of Rabban Gamliel, should remain intact, that their yichus, their heritage, their lineage should continue, and that they should remain unharmed. Now, of all the things in the world that he could have asked for, what's so special about a special physician specifically for Rabbi Tzadok and specifically for the family of Rabbi Gamliel to continue to survive? So in order to answer that question of why it is that he requested these two things, I think it's important to take a look at a halacha. This is normally a halacha program, so there's a halacha that we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, because there is a halacha called making a zecher l'churban. The concept of a Zecher L'Churban is that throughout all the years of Galus, and this was spearheaded by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, according to the Mishnayos in Masechta Sukkah, Masechta Rosh Hashanah, that right after the Churban HaBayis, he realized that there was a tremendous need for the Jewish people not to forget the Beis HaMikdash. That we should always keep in mind that there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash again in the future. And therefore, he set up a whole system of halachos through which we remember the Beis HaMikdash. For example, it used to be in the times of the Beis HaMikdash that we would only take lulav for one day anywhere but Yerushalayim, anywhere but the Old City, the Makom HaMikdash. But in the Makom HaMikdash, we would take lulav for 7 days. Once we didn't have a Makom HaMikdash anymore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that we should take lulav even b'Medina, even outside of Yerushalayim, for all 7 days. Why? Zecher l'Mikdash, we should remember the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says that the reason Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realized this was so important, the motivation of doing this, was that there's a pasuk. The pasuk says, Tzion hi doresh ein la. The Navi Yirmiyahu laments how no one is being doresh Tzion. No one is looking for, seeking out Zion. No one is looking for Yerushalayim. And that's a lament, and that's sad. And the halacha is that one is supposed to mechlal debayi drisha, the Gemara says. We see from there that it requires drisha. We need to seek out Yerushalayim. We need to look for a way to remember Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a series of takanos through which we remember Yerushalayim. But then there's another Gemara that also talks about Zecher l'Mikdash, but oddly it quotes an entirely different pasuk, and not only an entirely different pasuk, it doesn't even quote any of the same examples of Zecher l'Mikdash that we have in that Gemara Sukkah, Daf Mem Aleph. The other Gemara appears on the last Daf of the third parak of Maseches Baba Basra. And the Gemara tells us a braisa that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabu Prushin b'Yisrael, Shalol Lechol Basar v'Shalol Lishtos Yayin, that people decided that the only way to mourn properly is to not eat meat and not drink any wine. Because after all, they said that the Mizbeach is no longer going to have the meat of Karbanos being brought on it. It's no longer going to have the Nesachim of the Yayin, of the wine, poured on it. So why should we enjoy something that the Mizbeach doesn't enjoy? So the Gemara says, Nitpala hen Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua heard about this plan and he said to them, Banai, mipnei ma'i atam ochven basar v'inatam shosim yayin. Why is it that you're not eating meat and drinking wine? And they said, well, we can't. We can't bring ourselves to do it if the Mizbeach doesn't get to have meat and wine. So he said, I see where you're coming from. But if that's the case, then lechem lo nochal. We shouldn't eat bread either. Shekvar batlu minachos, because karban mincha was made from flour and water and oil, same ingredients as bread, and it was baked very often as a bread or fried as a bread. So you shouldn't be able to have any bread products either. So he said, you're right, we won't have that either. We won't have bread either. So he said, but then peros lo nochal, you shouldn't eat fruits either, because they used to bring bikurim, the first fruits, every year to Yerushalayim, to the Mizbeach, and you're not going to be able to eat fruits either. So they said, that's okay, efshar b'peros achrini, that bikurim is only the 7 fruits that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. Apples, oranges, plums, pears, peaches, we could survive on other fruits. There are other fruits that we'll be able to eat. Then he said to them, but if really you're going to follow this to its logical conclusion, mayim lo nishta, you're not going to be able to drink wine, to drink water rather, because there was nisach hamayim, there was pouring of the water as a major part of what we did on Sukkot in the Beis HaMikdash. So what are you going to do without water? You're not going to be able to drink water. So they gave up and they said, you're right. We don't know what to do. How are we supposed to mourn? What should we be doing? They were at a loss. They realized that this logic of not eating meat and not drinking wine is not going to work, that it's not going to happen, because if they were to follow it to its logical conclusion, they wouldn't be able to eat or drink anything. Just parenthetically, Mori Verabi Rav Shechter points out that the minhag of not eating meat and drinking wine during the 9 days is probably based on this Gemara. People often make the mistake and say, oh, it's a halacha of Avelus that we don't eat meat and drink wine. That's not at all true. There is no such halacha in Avelus that one is not allowed to eat meat and drink wine. There's a halacha in Onen is not allowed to eat meat and drink wine. But in Avel, the Gemara in Erevin says, lo nivra yayin ela l'nachim bo'as Avelim, that wine was created specifically for the purpose of Nicham Avelim. It's meant for an Avel. We don't eat meat and drink wine during the 9 days, Ashkenazim at least during the 9 days, and Sephardim during the week of Tisha B'Av. probably based on this Gemara, because that was the initial reaction of the Jewish community at the time, to refrain from that which we most closely associate with the Mizbeach. So these people were at a loss. They said, so what should we do? So Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll tell you what to do. We should make what's called a Zecher L'Churban. How do you make a Zecher L'Churban? When you build a house, prepare the whole house and plaster the whole thing, except leave out one amma by one amma across from the door that remains unfinished. And then through that unfinished part that you see every time you walk in and out of the house, you'll remember that there was a Beis HaMikdash. When you set a table, leave off a little something. When a woman makes her jewelry up, leave off a little something so that people will remember that there was a Beis HaMikdash. And that way, we'll have a proper Zecher L'Mikdash. And the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, "Uminalan davdinan Zecher L'Mikdash." How do I know that we're supposed to make a Zecher L'Mikdash, that we're supposed to have something to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash? And the Gemara says, oh, it's a pasuk. So now, knowing the Gemara in Sukkah, you expect to know which pasuk we're going to quote, that we're going to quote the pasuk of Tzion hi doresh einla, that there's no one being doresh Tzion, and that bayi drisha, someone needs to seek after and to look for Tzion. But that's not the pasuk the Gemara quotes. Instead, the Gemara quotes an entirely different pasuk. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach imini tidvak lishoni lechiki, that how dare we forget Yerushalayim, if I were to ever forget the Jerusalem. We have a whole different pasuk to remind us that we're not supposed to forget Yerushalayim. In fact, the Gemara says that one of the things we do as a Zecher L'Mikdash is when a chasan and kala get married, we put Ether Makla al Rosh Chasanim. We put a little bit of ashes on the head of the chasan, right in the spot where he normally puts his tefillin, as a way of reminding him that even in this time of great simcha, we're still mourning the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. And the question is obvious. Two different Gemaras, one in Sukkah Daf Mem Aleph, one in Baba Basra Daf Samach, that both talk about making a Zecher L'Mikdash, but they have totally different examples of Zecher L'Mikdash, Zecher L'Churban, and not only do they have totally different examples, they have different psukim to teach the din of making a Zecher L'Churban. So what are we to make of that? Normally you don't have two psukim to teach the same halacha. So there's an idea that I heard in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, but then I saw that also Rav Asher Weiss, who I just heard on the Headlines program last week, Rav Asher Weiss also has the same idea with all of the same rayas. So you know that, and it resonates as MS, it resonates as truth, that this is Amito Shel Torah. I'm very confident that this is the correct pshat in understanding both of these sugyas, where both of these great gedolim suggest the following, that there's, even though the Gemara uses the same term, Zecher L'Churban, in both places. Sometimes you'll have a term in Shas that the same words appear in two different places, but they mean two different things. The most famous example is probably the word Chazaka. The word Chazaka in Shas appears in different places. It actually means five different things throughout all of Shas. Well, over here, the term Zecher L'Churban is used in both places. But the way Rav Soloveitchik formulated it is that really one of these halachos is a Zecher L'Churban, and the other one is a Zecher L'Mikdash. The Gemara in Baba Basra that tells us about the amma by an amma that should remain unfinished in our homes, that tells us about the unfinished jewelry, that tells us about the ashes on the head of a chasen, that Gemara is talking about remembering the terrible event of the Churban, mourning the terrible Churban. The Gemara in Maseches Sukkah that talks about taking lulav for all 7 days, or about how on the second day of Pesach we're still going to not eat the new grains, Chadash is going to remain Aser as a Zecher L'Mikdash. All of these other halachos that we have as a Zecher L'Mikdash, that's not a Zecher L'Churban. These aren't halachos that are about blowing shofar on Shabbos in a place that has a Beis Din. All the different examples that are brought over there, these aren't examples of remembering the Churban HaBayis, of remembering the terrible destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This is Zecher L'Mikdash. This is remembering the glory of the Beis HaMikdash, remembering how great the Beis HaMikdash was, remembering the Beis HaMikdash in all of its majesty. And that's the spark we're trying to keep alive, not just to mourn, but to remember what it was actually like, to see the grandeur of it all in our mind's eye and keep it in our hearts. And that's why there are two different psukim. One is to be Doresh Tzion in a positive way, and the other is Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, not to forget about the Churban. And I think that maybe that's what Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was asking for when he made those last two requests. He was saying, give me a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok. Why did Rabbi Tzadok need a doctor? Because the Gemara explains in Maseches Gittin, Rabbi Tzadok was very ill because he fasted for 40 years because of the impending Churban. He was mourning the Churban before it even happened because he knew it was going to happen. So he was in very frail health and he needed some help. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was saying, let's keep alive this picture, this image of what it means to mourn, of what it means to suffer from the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Give me a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok. But then he said, as much as it's important to mourn and it's important to realize the magnitude of our loss, we also have to realize how great it was and how great it will once again be. We have to remember how great the Beis HaMikdash is. How do we remember the greatness and the glory of the Beis HaMikdash? Give me Shushilta de Rabban Gamliel. I want to keep the family of the Nasi, of Jewish leadership, when Klal Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael, with Yerushalayim as its capital, and the Makom HaMikdash, and the Ashras HaShchina, and everything that was happening with the Malchus Beis David, with everyone. I want to keep that alive, keep that image of what the Jewish people, when everything is clicking on all cylinders, when everything is going well, keep that image in our minds. We don't even remember what it means to bring a Korban Pesach anymore. We don't experience any of the Yom Tovim anymore, the way they were meant to be. We've never seen a Kohen Gadol come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippurim. We think we have a Yom Kippur experience, but it's a shell of the original Yom Kippur experience. We have to remember the positive and how wonderful it was and what it is that we're searching for, what it is that we're hoping for. I think that's the avoda of Tisha B'Av. Certainly, Tein Li Yavne V'Chachameha, we always have to keep Torah alive. We always have to remember that our dedication to Torah is paramount if we're going to survive any galus. But if we're going to relate properly to the Beis HaMikdash, we need to have a remembrance for Rabbi Tzadok. We need to know what it means to mourn, what it means to suffer through an avelus because of the terrible churban that happened and all of the churbanos that happened since then in Jewish history. And we also need to keep alive the Shushilta D'Rabban Gamliel. Need to remember the majesty and the glory of the Beis HaMikdash, because we're not mourning something that's lost forever. We're mourning something that's going to one day return. And Amir Tzashem, by the time this plays on the radio, we should already have been zoche to the return of that Beis HaMikdash, and the mourning should stop, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring back his great glory to Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh.